Welcome to the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network.
And hello again, I'm John Jeffers here at the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network and KYAH, 540 AM, Utah's Talk Authority. Welcome, welcome, glad you're here for today. You know, some of the things that I want to talk to you about is, and we're not going to talk, you know, we're going to do a little bit about the shooters, the mass shootings over the weekend, but the truth is this, you're going to hear all kinds of talk about gun control. And the fact is this, gun control doesn't work. Doesn't work in the gun-free zones, and it doesn't work in the city of Chicago, who has one of the toughest gun control laws on the books in the country. I mean, they had over 32 shootings this past weekend. And it's never reported by the national mainstream media. Because it's run, well, Chicago's run by Democrats. And you'll never hear them say anything wrong. But, you know, once again, we hear the Democrats screaming about Trump's a racist, da-da-da-da-da. And you kind of, if you're honest with yourself, you got to ask yourself this question. Where do they come up with that? What are they talking about? Where do they come up with it? Well, I decided to do a little digging, and I came up with this. And it's called the Charlottesville Lie. Now, believe it or not, you're not going to believe where I found this. I found it from a CNN reporter, a political analyst named Steve Cortez. And he goes down and he actually tells you where this lie came up from that's been repeated over and over and over again. So I want you to listen to Steve. It's about 5 minutes spiel, but you need to hear it to understand why some people seem to think this. So if you would, listen to this.
Politicians lie. We all know that. This is not an indictment of all politicians. It's simply part of the game. It's our job as informed citizens to figure out the truth. And that's where journalists and the media come in. They are supposed to help us ferret out fact from fiction. So when they get a fact wrong, that's bad. When they get a fact wrong, know it's wrong, and don't correct it, that's worse. That's not getting a fact wrong, that's a lie. And that's journalistic malfeasance. The best, or maybe worst, example of this followed a presidential press conference at Trump Tower on Tuesday, August 15th, 2017. You remember what happened that previous weekend. A group of white supremacists held a white pride rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. The ostensible reason was to protest the removal of a statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. An Antifa group showed up to counter-protest. The mayor and the police were totally unprepared to deal with the violence that ensued. Tragically, a young woman, Heather Heyer, was run over and killed by a neo-Nazi. The press conference itself was raucous. The media was antagonistic. The president was combative. Out of it all, one phrase eclipsed the thousands of words exchanged. The media reported that President Trump described neo-Nazis as very fine people. Only he didn't. In fact, he didn't even hint at it. Just the opposite. He condemned the neo-Nazis in no uncertain terms. So then, who were the fine people he mentioned? The answer? He was referring to another group of Charlottesville demonstrators who came out that weekend. Protesters who wanted the Robert E. Lee statue removed, and protesters who wanted to keep the statue and restore the park's original name. This is what President Trump said about those peaceful protesters. You also had some very fine people on both sides. You had people in that group that were there to protest the taking down of, to them, a very, very important statue, and the renaming of a park from Robert E. Lee to another name. A few moments later, in case there would be any misunderstanding, he makes his meaning even more explicit. I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists. They should be condemned totally. Lest you have any doubts that good people were in Charlottesville to protest the removal of the Robert E. Lee statue, the New York Times confirmed it in a story they published the next day, August 16th. Good people can go to Charlottesville, said Michelle Percy, a night shift worker at a Wichita, Kansas retirement home who drove all night with a conservative group that opposed the planned removal of a statue of the Confederate general, Robert E. Lee. After listening to Mr. Trump on Tuesday, she said it was as if he had channeled her and her friends who had no interest in standing with Nazis or white supremacists. There's another simple test that we can employ to prove that the president was not referring to the neo-Nazis as fine people. It's so obvious, it's painful to mention. The president's daughter and son-in-law are Orthodox Jews. His grandchildren are Jewish. And if that's still not enough to convince you, how about this? Does anyone believe that Donald Trump thinks they're a good Antifa? The leftist thugs who are counter-protesting the neo-Nazi thugs? After all, if those two groups were the only ones involved, and there were fine people on both sides, that means the president believed that there were fine Antifa people. Even MSNBC should have found that hard to swallow. Again, the very fine people on both sides President Trump described at the press conference were the people who wanted to remove the Robert E. Lee statue and the people who wanted to keep it. Both of these groups were nonviolent protesters. Fine people with very different ideological views. The scandal of Charlottesville is not what President Trump said about neo-Nazis. It's what the media said President Trump said about neo-Nazis. It's a scandal because news reporting is supposed to be about gathering facts, not promoting an agenda. In Charlottesville, they got it exactly backwards. We have been living with the consequences ever since. Plainly put, ABC, CBS, NBC, NPR, The New York Times, The Washington Post, and the others spread a malicious lie that has poisoned our national dialogue. They should apologize to the American people for what they have done. Don't hold your breath. Actually, I have a better idea. Let out a big sigh of relief, because now you know the truth. I'm Steve Cortez, CNN political commentator and columnist for Real Clear Politics for Prager University.
There you go. Now we know where that came from. Now, Mr. Cortez is correct. They will never, the mainstream media, will never, ever, ever correct it. Because it's an agenda, not a fact driven story. But I wanted to share that with you because so many times I've thought to myself, where in the hell are they coming up with this kind of, you know, story? Well, now we all know. And now we know that's all nonsense. It's not true. It was misreported and reported as fact. So there you have it. Also, before I move on, I want to thank one of our listeners, Charles in Nebraska. I got your parcel that you sent to me. Thank you for your generous donation to help keep CRN running. I really appreciate it, my friend. Haven't heard from you in a while, but thank you just the same. I really appreciate it. I am humbled by your generosity. Thank you. Now, as we've, you know, here we are, the following days from the mass shootings. A couple things just want to point out. One, watch how the mainstream media starts to take the camera and shy it away from the Dayton shooter. Why? Because he's a confirmed socialist. Elizabeth Warren supporter. Loves socialism. They're going to try. They're going to focus the camera on the El Paso shooter, who, yes, he, you know, if it's truly his manifesto, I haven't heard anybody actually confirm who is actually his. But nonetheless, you talk about somebody that's all totally messed up. And we're not talking just from his actions. We're talking about his political views. He doesn't like Hispanics. So he decides, I'm going to go kill Hispanics. But he also wanted universal health care and universal income. Those two ideas are not conservative viewpoints. Just the opposite. So if there's ever a person who should have never had a weapon, it's him. We also watching the Democrats go crazy. Case in point, look at Cory Booker. The only reason he's running for president is because it strokes his ego. He has no real plans. He really doesn't. But he loves the media spotlight, and the mainstream media is more than willing to shine it upon him. You know, he was bitching about President Trump's presser over the weekend, where he condemned, you know, the racial hatred, white supremacy. But when he was told about it, the anchor, the interviewer, asked him, said, this is what President Trump said. Is this good enough? And Cory Booker says, no. So that just goes to prove the fact that no matter what Trump says, no matter what the president does, it will never, ever be good enough, or they want 180%. 180 degree turnaround. So whatever the president wants, the Democrats say no. And then we got former President Obama. He decided to weigh in on it. Unfortunately for him, and I'm glad to see President Trump slam him right back. During the Obama years, there were at least 32 mass shootings, including the massacre of children at Sandy Hook, the attack on gays at Pulse nightclub, and the police shooting in Dallas, Texas. Now, if Obama is guilty of this, then doesn't that make Biden also guilty, as he was a member, the number two man in the administration, the vice president? I'm just putting it out there. So when you run across somebody who says that Trump's a racist, you can say, no, that was wrong. That's absolutely incorrect. That's not what was said. And better yet, ask them, when has President Trump ever said that the white race is better than X race? X being the variable, throw whatever race you want in there. Because it never happened. He never said it. Just happened to scream about Charlottesville, you now have the information to say, no, that was misreported and was never, ever corrected by the mainstream media. President Trump never said that. So that's where that's going. Plus, if they start bitching about Trump, you can always throw in the thing that, hey, where was your outrage when there were 32 mass shootings on Barack Obama's watch? Just putting it out there. Just thought I'd, you know, mention it. Anyways. And, you know, here's another thing. You hear everybody screaming about assault weapons, assault weapons, assault weapons. The fact of the matter is, for well over 50 years, it has been illegal for American citizens to own an assault weapon. That is a weapon that shoots on full automatic. If you ask liberals definition of an assault weapon, they probably cannot tell you. If you ask them about the AR-15, they'll scream it's an assault weapon, when in fact it is not. It is a semi-automatic rifle. Period. And it's been around for well over 40 years. Just putting it out there. You can take it from there. You don't need me to go down the entire litany. You already know it. So, when you hear about people screaming, you don't need an AR whatever. Well, what, since when does what I own any of their business? It really isn't any of their business at all. Now here at the Jeffers Brief and on Contra Radio Network, we have many shows. We do. We have the Conservative Underground with Don Lowry. We got the Prepper Guy with Mark Boyle. And then we got Don and Mark hooking up to do a show called The Two Crazy Guys. I got Wynn Parkinson talking about the Dope Farm Report. And really, Wynn is a homesteader, and he puts out all this information in 20 and 30 minute clips that are available on CRN, Contra Radio Network. You want to find it, we're on podbean.com. We also do another show on occasion called The Patriot Alliance, when all four of us get together and whoever else wants to call in, we all do a roundtable discussion. And why am I telling you this? I'm telling you this because we have a tendency, at least I started noticing it and I caught myself. You know, here on the Jeffers Brief, I like to talk about politics. I want to put the information out there that you're not going to get from anywhere else. But we also cater to the preppers. And you're probably saying, you probably got an idea of what a prepper is, and you're not real sure whether, you know, it's right for you or whatever. So I went to Rogue Preparedness, and they had this great article. It's called 20 Common Prepping Questions and Answers. And because I like preppers. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I am a prepper. I've never made a secret out of it. Never have. And that is because I do this show. You know what I'm saying? Now, there are those of you out there, I encourage you not to tell everybody that you are a prepper. I'm willing to take, you know, whatever risk is associated with the public knowing that. But in the meantime, if you're still not sure what prepping is or how to do it, let's get into this because it's important that you know. In case you guys are wondering, do I can food? I do not. My wife does. I ran across a company, and they've been around since 1976. I've never even heard of them until today. And it's called the Tatler Reusable Canning Lids. I'm going to try and see if we can't get them to sponsor our show here. But reusable canning lids, I've got to tell you something. I've watched my wife can food. She does a really good job at it. But the thing is, with the canning lids, usually you can only use them once and that's it. You got to throw them out and get a whole new thing. But with Tatler, you got these reusable canning lids. They're guaranteed to last a lifetime. So, and they've been on the market for 43 years. I've never even heard of them. So maybe get the word out for all you preppers out there and homesteaders. But sometimes you have to ask, you know, some people you're asking, what is prepping? Prepping is simple. To be prepared for everyday emergencies and natural disasters. We want to be able to rely on ourselves during times of crisis instead of putting unnecessary strain on others or the system. This way we can help ourselves as well as others instead of needing someone to save us. It's empowering. It's not about the end of the world. It's just being a little more self-reliant. Some of you heard about a bug out bag or a bob. You know, how much should it weigh? Well, it should weigh as much as you can handle. There is no right or wrong, no percentage based on body weight. It all comes down to how much you can and or want to carry. Some of, you know, we talk about storing water. And some of you have asked, can I reuse the bottles, you know, to store water? Only if you plan to stick them in the freezer due to potential leftover bacteria. Now, I wouldn't advise refilling water bottles and then storing them for long-term water storage. Even if you clean the bottles, however, it's a great idea to fill them and freeze them. It keeps your freezer running better, keeps your freezer colder for longer when there's a blackout, and you can always use it as potable water. Now, here's another one that, you know, I get questions on, especially the warlord over in Rhode Island. He's been a listener to Contra Radio Network for a while. And he sent me a picture one night. I was done with the show. Show me where he stores his preps. Now, you can store your preps under your bed, under your table, put stuff in storage bins, make a table out of them, place a tablecloth over it, inside closets, behind your couch. Get creative. You can store many things out in your garage or shed. The only things I wouldn't store out there are food and water. I would even say water is okay, just as long as it's sealed and doesn't come in contact with the floor or direct sunlight. And then here's the big one. You know, we have a few big ones. Well, I would say, you know, how much money does it cost? You know, how can I prep if I have no money? Well, I'm going to tell you something. There's a lot of stuff out there that's available. You can read the blogs, watch YouTube videos, read books, practice skills, shop deals, save your money, enter giveaways. Check out the free section on Craigslist. Make extra money however you can. And it doesn't cost that much to prep, really. And now you want to say, well, I heard you say practice your skills. Well, where do I practice my skills if I live in the city, right? Well, you can practice in your backyard, at the park, inside your home. Use the barbecue at your apartment complex. Unless you plan on camping, you don't need to go anywhere special to practice your skills. Many times, it's actually better to practice them at home so that you're in a controlled environment, and if anything goes wrong, you're at home and can easily fix it. Now here's the iffy part. We talked about, at the beginning, about letting your friends and family know you're a prepper. A couple things you're going to run into. One, you have no credibility with your family. You have none. I'm telling you that now. As soon as you tell your family or let them in on the secret that you're prepping, and they're going, and you know, they ask, what are you prepping for? And you give them your answers. They're going to say, well, you're nuts. No. You're nuts. We don't want a part of it. Most of the time, your family's just going to, you know, shuffle you off. They don't care. They're not going to take you seriously. There might be a few family members who you're particularly close with who get it. So, you know, how do you get your friends and family involved in preparedness? Well, you got to be prepared for them. And what I mean is this. When you're out and about and your friend needs a Band-Aid, pull out your first aid kit and give it to them. When your spouse needs chapstick, pull it out and offer it to them. When your friend needs to cut something, pull out your multi-tool or knife. It may not dawn on them right away that you're always prepared, but over time they should hopefully get it. And maybe even get curious about it. And if it's a spouse, you could sit down with them and have an open conversation about what prepping means to you and why you feel it's an important investment. It's like it's insurance. Ensuring that you'll be safe and taken care of during emergencies and disasters. Now, your spouse, for those of you that are married, will not always get it. Now, my wife didn't get it the first time. For a while, she just thought it was a phase that myself and a couple of other guys were going through. And I've told the story. And then when the hurricane struck New York, not the superstorm that the insurance companies would rather have you call it. But when the hurricane hit New York, New Jersey a couple years ago, the wife looked over at me Like, I remember it as clear as day, and you're going to remember it too when it happens with your spouse. They were showing on some video, water pouring into the subway system. And it was quiet, you know, just watching, and they show the water pouring in the subway system. And the wife looks over at me, and she says, "We got drinking water and food downstairs." And I said, "Well, yeah, we got that." I said, "What kind of a prepper would I be if I didn't at least get some very basics, food, water, and weapons? Everything else is just add-ons." But ever since that time, every once in a while, we'll go to the store together, and she'll say, "Do we have this in our supplies? I think we need it." Now, that's my cue. My cue is when she says, "I think we need it," is, "Yes, honey, we need that." And I get it. So, just an idea. So you're asking yourself, okay, John, I understand that. So how much food should I store? Well, there is no magic number. It depends on how much space you have, how much money you have, how many people you're storing food for, like family members, kids, that kind of thing. I would advise making a goal of having at least 2 weeks' worth of food for everyone in the household, but even a few days is better than nothing. Just get started by getting a little bit at a time during your normal grocery store visits, and it'll add up quickly over time. Don't forget to keep it organized and inventoried. Make sure you put a date on it. One of the places I always like to go when I'm looking to add to the food and water supply, the dollar store. Dollar General. Family Dollar. The Dollar Tree. You go there, you're going to get, you know, first of all, Dollar General is practically in every small town that I have ever seen. And it's a good store. It's a good chain. I like it. The prices are good. You can get a lot of different stuff there. Same thing with Family Dollar. Same thing with Dollar Tree. Sometimes you get different stuff, but a lot of times, pick up a case of food. Usually it's like 40 cents a can, and it will last a long time. Which brings us to the next question. You know, how do you properly store food for long-term storage? Well, there are a couple ways that are best. The first one is getting Mylar bags with oxygen absorbers. Those are cheap on eBay, by the oxygen absorbers, actually. It lasts quite a long time this way, unopened. The second way is to vacuum seal. Vacuum sealing works great on most things. You cannot vacuum seal your children, even though you might want to on occasion. Be aware that oxygen absorbers are good for one use. Once you open the package with the old oxygen absorber, it will no longer continue to work. Place a fresh one in there. Same goes if you store food in a mason jar. Every time you open it, you're letting oxygen in. But the old oxygen absorber isn't going to work any longer. You should place the vacuum sealed bags or Mylar bags in a bucket or some type of storage bin to prevent any breakage or animals or insects from getting at it. Now, some of you are saying, "Well, what if I don't want to prep for the end of the world?" Don't! There's plenty of other things to be prepared for, like everyday emergencies and natural disasters. You know, here we are in the middle of August. It's hot. You're going to run into some, you could run into some power outages. Maybe some severe storms. You know, it's out there. How much water should you store? Well, the rule is this. You have to store at least 2 gallons of water per person per day. Do the math. It's easy. You take 2 times the people in per person. So if you have 4 people in your family, you got to start out with 8 gallons. Per day. Then you multiply 8 times, you know, say you want to store water for 2 weeks, 8 times 14, that's how many gallons. You have 1 gallon for drinking, 1 gallon for hygiene, cleaning, and cooking. And don't forget to store at least 1 gallon per pet. So if you've got a cat and a dog, store at least 1 gallon. per day. Now, what skills do you need to learn? There are so many. Pick and choose and never stop learning, because I'm going to tell you something. There's plenty of different skills that you can pick up you want to do. Want to learn about mushrooms? Which ones you can eat, which ones you can't? There you go. Learn that one. Want to learn how to store water or how to get water? Learn that one. Want to learn emergency first aid or advanced emergency first aid or basic medical skills? Do it. It's available. Another question. Do you need a gas mask? Sure, if you want one. Have one for each member of your household. A gas mask is a temporary use item. It is not meant to be worn or used for long periods of time. The way that we plan to use our gas mask would be in the event that we must get away from a chemical spill, attack, or nuclear fallout. In these instances, you'd want to get far away from the situation while using the gas mask and get to a point in which you don't have to use the gas mask any longer. The filters don't store for a really long time, and you can only realistically buy and or carry so many filters, which is true. Believe me, I know. So you're thinking, well, what item should I buy first? All right, and this is how I've always talked about it. Start buying food and water first. You're going to need those basics. You'll need water more than you'll need food. You can live longer on water, but then you can't food, because basically you're not going to starve right off the bat. Yeah, you'll be hungry maybe, but you'll always be thirsty. You have to stay hydrated. Water first and then food. You might want to look into alternative cooking methods and water purification methods. Lots of easy stuff out there. So what if a critical incident never happens? That's great. What if I never get into a car accident? What if I never need health insurance? It's not about one day hoping to use these things. They're for just in case. It's good to be prepared. Now, some of you, I have a listener here in town. He's wheelchair bound and he listens to the show. So how do you prep if you're disabled? It's a great question and it bears an answer. Talk to your doctor about how you can be prepared for blackouts, such as having a backup power for medical equipment. This is a tough one for doctors, especially in this day and age with the opioid crisis. You have to talk to your doctor about getting extra medications to keep in the freezer for emergencies and disasters. Keep everything within easy reach. Make a list of emergency numbers and keep them in many places throughout the house and easily accessible. Make a bug out bag that is right for you and your transportation needs. Well, it's true. If you can't carry a backpack, can you pull or push a cart? Consider how long it'll take you to get from point A to point B. All this must be planned out in your emergency disaster plan and openly talked about with anyone in your household or caregivers. Then, of course, how long should my preps last? Now, if you're properly rotating your food, should that only last 2 to 5 years? Freeze-dried foods will last much longer, of course, but you may even want to rotate those as well. Keep the freshest items on hand. Rotate medical supplies at least once a year. Rotate your water every 1 to 3 years. Test your gear regularly. And then we have people say, what's bugging in? What's bugging out? Bugging in is you stay in your own house. Bugging out, you got a shelter or somewhere else to go to in the case of a critical emergency or a critical incident. So do you have to bug out? Absolutely not. Many situations don't require it. However, even if you don't ever plan to bug out, still make a bug out plan. It's all part of being prepared. Now, here's a tough one. How do I prep in an apartment? You know, that's a great question. You prep the same way you would in a house, except on a smaller scale. No space? Get creative by storing stuff in bins, stacking them, making it a table. No backyard? Go to the park or use the barbecue. No place for a garden? Try container gardening and sprouting. It's all about getting creative. You follow me? You dig it? Yes? Makes sense? Okay. some of the other things some of the things you should carry with you everywhere. You should. Sometimes you can't always have it with you, but it could be in your vehicle. That's good. You know, the most vital aspect of being a prepper is being prepared at all times. Unfortunately, many people who are fully prepared to deal with a disaster at home don't give much thought to how they would deal with a disaster while they are away. For example, happens on a Wednesday afternoon at 2:15. You're at work. Now, while it may not be possible to carry a full stockpile of survival supplies with you everywhere, and you don't want to do that anyways, there are a number of easy-to-carry items that could prove incredibly useful in a disaster situation. Number one, a lighter. The ability to start a fire is something that can be incredibly valuable in a disaster scenario. Now, while carrying a lighter is much more essential in a wilderness environment than it is in an urban environment, a lighter is still something worth carrying with you everywhere. It's a small item that won't take up much space, and it's something that can be life-saving in certain situations. Now, you got your BIC lighters, or a torch lighter, refillable torch lighter. You know, you got your Zippos. So, how about a multi-tool? You can't carry an entire toolbox with you everywhere you go, but you can carry a multi-tool. High-quality multi-tools often carry dozens of different tools in one compact package, including knives, pliers, scissors, saws, sockets, various screwdriver heads, and more. In the event that you ever have to make emergency repairs while away from home, a good multi-tool can prove invaluable. I would check out the Gerber suspension multiplier. You might like that one. How about a pocket tool? If you don't want to carry a multi-tool, a pocket tool is another great option. Now, unlike multi-tools, which can be a little bulky, pocket tools are about as slim as a credit card, making them easy to carry in your pocket or your wallet. They also contain a number of different tools, including bottle openers, saws, sockets, and more. And if you're looking for a great pocket tool, recommend the Wallet Ninja. It's a credit card sized pocket tool. It contains 18 different tools, including a ruler, a box opener, a can opener, various screwdriver heads, and more. How about a flashlight? Now, in the event of a major disaster, electricity is often one of the first things to go. Remember, I've often said, electricity is the thin, thin string that holds society together. Now, while this presents a number of major problems, one of the most immediate issues that loss of electricity presents is a lack of light. If you happen to be inside an unfamiliar building where the lights go out, finding your way out in the darkness and the chaos can be incredibly difficult. Of course, just one of many scenarios when having a flashlight on you is useful. In the event that you are caught away from your home or after a disaster, a flashlight is certainly something you'll want to have available. You know, I remember I started carrying my tactical flashlight with the Cree LED bulb in it when I was working day shift. And I caught a ration of you-know-what from my supposed co-workers who are my friends. And I said, well, I'll tell you what. I said, think about this. How many times do we get calls, you know, a burglar alarm or trespassers in an abandoned building, whatever, and it's bright sunshine, and then you walk into a dark building. It takes about 30 seconds or so for your eyes to adjust. However, if you got the flashlight with you and on you, no problem. Just thought I'd put it out there. Now, I like using a tactical flashlight with a Cree bulb. The batteries are not double A's. They are the CR123s. They're a bit more expensive, but the LED bulbs are bright, but they burn through the batteries like nothing. So have a good supply of those on you. And they're relatively inexpensive, the batteries. Paracord. You know what paracord is? Probably the most versatile survival supply. Because its extreme strength and durability, paracord can be used for a wide range of emergency applications, from creating a makeshift splint to creating a shelter. Now, while paracord may not seem like something that's convenient to carry around on a regular basis, there are a number of products on the market designed to convert paracord into an EDC item. You've seen the paracord survival bracelet? It contains 9 feet of paracord, as well as a built-in wire saw. Simply, clip the bracelet on your wrist, and you'll be able to take an emergency supply of paracord with you wherever you go. Many of myself and many of my coworkers carried that particular paracord bracelet. Why? Because if the time comes and we get injured, we can use paracord as a tourniquet. If, for emergency medical, if you have to, save a limb, save your life. That's just, one use. Pepper spray. If you aren't able or willing to carry a firearm for self-defense, pepper spray is the next best thing. It's available in canisters, small enough to carry on your keychains, but you don't need any kind of special permit to carry the pepper spray. Most importantly, a blast of pepper spray to the eyes and face will almost always stop even the most determined attacker. Hey, hold on now. 2% of the human population, pepper spray will have no effect on them. I heard that and I said, yeah, right. I've been sprayed with it. It would stop me. That was fine till about 18 months later when I actually had deployed it. And guess what? It didn't faze him. Here we go into empty hands self-defense. But anyways, you should know that. It should stop almost everybody except for 2% of the population. But it makes an ideal means of defense for someone who does not have any firearm or self-defense training. Having the means to defend yourself is a key component of disaster survival. And carrying pepper spray ensures that you're never caught defenseless. There's lots of... I did a show about a month or 2 months ago about the different types of pepper spray. Choose the one you like. The one you're going to look for is called Scoville units. It's going to tell you how hot the substance is. It varies. The higher the Scoville heat unit, the more it's going to burn. How about a pocket knife? Quintessential EDC item. And its reputation as being one of the most useful things that you can carry is well earned. The number of situations where a pocket knife can prove useful in a disaster scenario, there's just too many to list. And simply having a small knife on you at all times can make you better prepared for a wide range of obstacles. In addition to being a useful tool, a pocket knife can also serve as a means of self-defense in an emergency. Now, while there are a large number of high-quality pocket knives on the market from an equally large number of manufacturers, you might want to check out Cold Steel Voyager due to its sharp edge and ultra-strong locking mechanism. Or you can get a hold of Don Lowry at Conservative Underground. He collects these things. Small, cheap pocket knives, such as what you might find at the convenience store, are much more likely to break at the worst possible time. Murphy's Law says that will happen than they are to save your life in a disaster scenario. So think about that. How about a watch? Time as we know it may be a human construct, but it's something that will continue to be vitally important even if society collapses. Now today, most people rely on their phones to tell them the time, and wearing a watch has simply become a fashion statement. If you want to be able to tell the time in the event of a disaster, though, you'll need something that doesn't rely on cell phone towers and electricity. Of course, you also need a watch that is tough enough to stand up to the demands of disaster survival and keep on ticking. With that in mind, check out the Casio G-Shock. Now, it's popular among military personnel due to its durability. The Casio G-Shock is the perfect EDC watch for disaster preparedness. It's waterproof, impact resistant, meaning it can stand up to the elements as well as take a beating. And as an added bonus, the G-Shock is also a fine looking watch that easily pairs with most outfits for you fashion conscious preppers out there. How about a survival pen? Pens are popular everyday carry items due to the fact they are something most people use on a daily basis. However, a pen is probably not the first item you'll be reaching for in a disaster scenario. Survival pens are different, though. These pens serve as a sort of multi-tool that includes things such as flashlight, compass, window breaker, self-defense tip, and more. If you carry a survival pen, you'll have a fully functional pen for day-to-day use, as well as all the other tools that a survival pen includes for emergency use. Now, there are a lot of survival pens out there. Perhaps you might want to check out the Yosmo, Y-O-S-M-O, the Yosmo U2 Tactical Pen. The last thing, how about a compass? At a time when everyone has powerful GPS in their pockets at all times, using a compass for navigation has largely become a forgotten what? A forgotten skill. If you're trying to find your way around after a major disaster, though, relying on your smartphone's GPS likely won't be an option. In emergency situations such as this, having a compass on you can prove to be invaluable. Now, most of them, the most convenient way to make a compass part of your EDC, which is your everyday carry list, is to purchase a small keychain compass. I don't like that. I went ahead and I spent the $70 for a military compass. For those of you that have been in the military, especially the infantry, you know what kind of compass I'm talking about. You've had basic land navigation training, which, by the way, if you haven't done it in a while, you need to refamiliarize yourself with how to do it. It's very important. Having a compass and you've got a proper map, you can go places. You know what places not to go to, how to get around those places, everything else. Having a compass is a good thing. All right, living in the digital age. I got what? I got about 10 minutes. So, before I go, you know, we are all on computers. You're probably listening to this on your computer or your cell phone right now anyways. So, how a digital footprint is used to track you and how to erase it. This is important. You know, it's not only the ability to use the internet anonymously is desirable for many people. There's a school of thought that only people with something to hide seek anonymity and privacy on the internet. However, for the same reasons those people don't take their phone calls on speakerphone in a crowded bus, there are very valid reasons to desire anonymity while using the internet. Now, that desire gets stronger and stronger every year, spurred on by the almost daily revelations of government surveillance, overreach in many countries around the world, including here in the United States. The NSA, that's what they do. So, anonymity footprints and their challenges. Now, anonymity, like security, has many layers. The raw connection to the internet is only one facet and probably gets too much focus. Certainly, your IP address can lead back to you, but there are many ways to hide your IP address that observers have developed other methods of piercing anonymity. Now, these techniques involve different levels of technology and source, and some are not technology related at all. These footprints that we leave behind include temporary and cache files, IP address leakage, in the clear DNS, WebRTC queries, traffic correlation, browser fingerprinting, accidental clearnet leakage, and stylometry. There's not much that an operating system can do against the stylometry analysis. There are a few tools published, and look them up at Drexel University. The other problems have technical solutions, which are summarized. And there are many options available, and we're going to limit those selections to Tails, Cubes, OS, and Unix. So, but first, let's go with our temporary and cache files on our computers. Web browsers are notorious for the amount of files they store. Static content such as images, and sometimes entire pages are cached to make subsequent site visits faster. Other identifying data such as cookies are also stored in order to provide authentication and preference data to websites. All of that data could go a long way to identifying sites you visited when it's left behind on the machine you used. Two types of memory in the computer. Temporary memory used by the operating system to process data in open applications is called RAM, random access memory. RAM is volatile, meaning its content is destroyed when the computer is shut down. More permanent memory is needed to store things like user files, web browser temp files. That type of memory is provided by things like hard disk drives and USB drives or memory cards. This type of memory is persistent, meaning its contents are more permanent and will survive a computer restart. A live CD is a good tool to ensure no files are left behind on that persistent memory. A live CD is an operating system you can boot into from a CD rather than installing it on a system. There's a special tool that live CDs use called a RAM disk. As it sounds, a RAM disk is a disk in RAM. The live CD steals some RAM from the computer and creates a virtual hard drive from it. Now, the live CD doesn't know the difference and uses that disk as if it were a hard disk drive to store its persistent data. However, because it's really just RAM, its contents are destroyed when the system is shut down. It's possible to configure live CDs to store their data on true persistent devices, such as USB sticks. But if you're worried about anonymity, it'd be unwise to do that. Going one step further, the data in RAM isn't usually deliberately erased when a live CD system is shut down. Rather, the memory is just released to allow the operating system to reallocate it. This means that whatever was lost in that memory space is still there until it gets reused. It's technically possible to read that data, even though it's not addressed to anymore. A live CD distribution is like Tails is aware of this and deliberately overwrites the RAM space it used before releasing it. You follow? I know you're thinking, how do I remember all this? Well, I don't know. You will. You always have this podcast to come back to listen to it. It's true. What else? All right. How about IP address leakage? The internet uses TCP and IP. In the OSI model, that refers to the layer 3 IP and layer 4 TCP technologies required to make it work. It's therefore necessary that every single internet request to have an IP address in it to tell the recipient server where to send its response. Now, those IPs can be and usually are logged and can be traced back to individual humans fairly easily. The very basic function of any anonymity-focused system should be to obfuscate your IP address. Tails, CubesOS, and Unix can all use Tor, which accomplishes this. In the clear DNS and WebRTC queries, your computer does a lot of things. When using the internet and requesting data from remote servers is just one part of it. Most internet communication is done using domain names instead of IP address. But because the internet relies on IP addresses to work, there has to be some process to reconcile a domain name with an IP address. That's the role of DNS, the domain name system. When your computer issues a DNS query, an observer will then know what site you're about to visit, even if you've encrypted the actual communication itself using a VPN or some similar process. The WebRTC, Web Real-Time Communication, is a set of protocols designed to allow real-time communication over the web. Unfortunately, those protocols can leak things such as your IP address, even if you're routing your DNS through a secure channel. Hardening your browser to refuse WebRTC connections and routing your DNS through a Tor are easy ways to avoid these pitfalls. Now, traffic patterns or traffic correlation is an advanced technique that usually requires significant resources to do well. Consider the Tor network. At least three Tor nodes are involved in any request. in order to correlate an encrypted request from the Tor entry node to the same request coming out of a Tor exit node, an observer would have to be able to surveil a large number of all Tor nodes. But just because it's hard doesn't mean it is impossible. Running different applications through the same Tor circuit can make this type of correlation easier. Each request would retain its individual anonymity, but taken as a whole, the large amount of traffic can lead back to a single user. Tor stream isolation creates different routes for each application, which makes this type of analysis harder. Hunix performs stream isolation. Browser fingerprinting. It's a complementary technique to traffic pattern analysis. Web browser requests not only include necessary information, such as what page to send, but also complementary data, such as the browser you're using, called the user agent, at what link you click to arrive at the site, called the referrer. Additionally, if you have JavaScript enabled, a whole slew of other seemingly innocuous information about your browser and your operating system can be gained. It's possible for an observer to match up a dozen or so browser characteristics to determine that a single user is behind many requests. The EFF maintains a project named Panopticlick, and after the Panopticon prison model that allows a single guard to watch every prisoner. You can run a test to see how vulnerable you are to browser fingerprinting. Increasingly enough, the naked Firefox browser with script blocker installed is better protected against browser fingerprinting than the hardened Tor browser that comes with the Tails Live CD. But on the other hand, the naked browser is more unusual, which could make someone easier to fingerprint. You follow me? Get it? We are down to 2 minutes. We're going to try for it. Let's see what he got here. Not yet. But pretty much that's how we're talking about. I wanted to put that out there because some of you, I know, are worried about, well, internet security. Now, while it is true there are a number of keyboard warriors out there who would never say to you anything face-to-face, but feel free to do so through the safety of their keyboard and an internet connection. Let's face it. Somebody walks up to you and calls you a racist son of a bitch, you're probably going to throat punch them. And you rightfully should. So anyways, that's what we did. Today was, this episode for the Jeffers Brief is really for the preppers. We only touched a little bit on the political side, but like I said, I set up Contra Radio Network to be for preppers and patriots, because many times the subset of this culture do intermingle. They do cross over into each other. Many times you'll find a prepper who's also a patriot. And many times you'll find a patriot who is also a prepper. You follow? That's why I set up CRN. Get the information out there to you. Now, I want to thank you all for taking a little bit of time listening. If you like what you heard, get a hold of me. Email me if you want. ContraRadio@live.com. ContraRadio@live.com. For those of you listening in Utah on KYAH 540 AM, again, you too can use an email. Get a hold of me. Tell me what you think of the show. Tell me what you think about CRN. What would you like seeing different? What do you want to see addressed that isn't being addressed? Are we doing too much of one thing, not enough of the other? Let me know. I can pass it along to all the other hosts. And they will, you know what? They're great people. They'll listen. Now, I am looking for a woman, a female prepper, who wants to do a show. If you do, get a hold of me. ContraRadio@live.com, ContraRadio@live.com. Let's talk about it. If you want to do a show yourself, you don't have to be a prepper, but you should be a patriot. I will not allow any other type of communist or socialist type thing there. So until next time, get a hold of me. Talk to you later. Have a good week.